Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired in the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, November 10th, 2013. This is episode 1030. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is the reliable domain name registration and management service that's simple, honest, and easy to use. For exceptional customer support and 10% off your new domain name, go to Hover.com/TechGuy and use the offer code TechGuy. And by RingCentral. I love our cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup cost, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit RingCentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Hey, Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater. The internet, home theater, and cell phones. And then a little bit of cell phones mixed in there. Oh, and digital photography coming up in about an hour and a half. The Phone Rangers here, Heather Hammond. We're just talking about how women have ruined technology. No, I'm not nuts. Heather, good to see you.
See you.
Apparently a local radio host here just went off about how women have ruined sports. And if you told that to Lisa, my girlfriend, she would be a little mad since she is the bigger of the two Niners, of the two of us, in terms of the NFL.
I would love to see her roundhouse that guy.
I sit there going, Lisa, so what is a safety exactly? When they do this over there, what do they say? And she'll explain it to me. So believe me.
I love it.
Women have not ruined sports or technology. Although some are saying Marissa Meyer is ruining Yahoo.
Then there's that.
There's some Yahoo employees unhappy because Melissa's grading on the curve. Melissa, why do you say Melissa? Marissa is grading on the curve. She's using, you know, these are very controversial. It started with Jack Welch at General Electric, something called stack ranking. They do it at Microsoft. They do it at Yahoo. And it's a little bit like the TV show Survivor. If you've seen Survivor, managers are required to rank their employees from the A rank employee down to the, you know, not so hot, the C. You know, people call them A, B, and C employees. And if you're a C employee and more than twice, you're supposed to be fired just automatically. That's what happens. But it's a little controversial. General Electric dumped it pretty quick. Microsoft's been doing it forever. And there are those who say Microsoft does not, part of the reason Microsoft has such problems is because everybody's so afraid of getting voted off the island that they're all being, you know, playing politics. They're not thinking about the customer. They're not thinking about Microsoft. They're thinking about, you know, how they keep their job. That doesn't necessarily make for either a better workplace or a better product. And isn't it all about product, really? I look at Amazon and the corporate culture they've got now. Admittedly, it can be a little crazy there. But it's very clear that the thing that Amazon values most, they put the customer first. And I think, you know, they bought Zappos, the shoe company. Have you ever bought a shoes from Zappos? Really a great experience. Like, you'll buy a pair of shoes, and then they'll say, oh, just because we like you, we're going to have that for you tomorrow. They'll overnight it. Or, I mean, it's all about customer satisfaction. And Tony Hsieh, the CEO and founder of Zappos, really he's written some interesting books about the culture and how you create a great customer-focused culture. For instance, they don't have vacation time at Zappos. You take what you need. You just, you know, well, it takes no problem. Take some time off. We're thinking about doing that here, Heather. So I'll see you later. Bye-bye. No.
Oh.
Because what happens is the teams enforce it. You don't disappear because you're working a team, and the other team members go, what are you doing? But if you go, I'm burnt out, I got to take a few weeks off. And nobody counts it. I think it's very interesting. Very interesting.
Well, we've got you on tape saying that.
Look for your revised employee handbook. Never. Never.
Kim Schaffer will be here shortly.
Never. So PlayStation 4 comes out in 5 days. The new gaming machine from Sony. And then in 12 days, the Xbox One. These are, boy, it's head-to-head. It's a battle to the finish of these two contenders. Christmas, of course, the big holiday buying, Christmas and Hanukkah and Festiva and whatever it is you celebrate, the big buying season right now. This is when console and console games tend to be sold. So they want to get them out in time. They have. Target kind of blew it, and they sent out, apparently, they sent out a few Xbox Ones in pre-order by accident. So people have already got them. A guy who goes by the name Moonlight Swami has his Xbox One. He's talking a little bit about it. Sounds pretty cool. He does point out, and you might be prepared for this Christmas morning. He does point out that before you can play it, you need to download 500 megabytes of additional stuff. And then, if you want to download games, they're giant. Now, I bought the games on disc, but you know, a DVD only holds about 5 gigabytes. NBA 2K14 is 43 gigabytes of downloads. What? That would take weeks. Madden and FIFA, 12 gigabytes and 8 gigabytes, respectively. Forza, the driving game, is beautiful. 31 gigabytes. Call of Duty Ghosts, that's the most popular game around right now. You have to download 39 gigabytes, Moonlight Swami says. Wow. Wow. Watch for a lot of coverage of the two. This week, of course, the big week for Twitter. They went public. That means a few of the Twitter founders are now billionaires. The Evan Williams, who is kind of the guy in charge, the chief founder in chief, now worth $2.5 billion overnight. Now, it's on paper, right? Because you can't sell all that stock immediately, or the stock price would tank. But still, it's not bad. Not bad. A lot of people made money. A lot of millionaires, as always with a big tech IPO, public offering. People get rich because a lot of times when a company starts up, they don't have cash, so they give them shares. You know who didn't get rich? The one who created the fail whale. In the early days of Twitter, you don't see it much anymore, but remember, Twitter was always down. It's kind of an interesting story. The woman who drew that illustration of the dreaming whale lofted into the air by many birds didn't make a penny. Not a penny. The reason is she designed it just as for a personal thing. She said, a visual greeting to my friends overseas. She had moved to Australia from China in 2002. She's from Shanghai. And she would send them this picture. It's called Lifting a Dreamer. And, it's so cute. I'm sure you'd recognize it the minute you saw it because you saw it all the time on Twitter. She decided it'd be kind of fun to make a little money on it. So she put it on a stock photo site, iStockPhoto. And that's where the Twitter folks found it. They paid the $10 or whatever it was and bought it and have been using it ever since. Conan O'Brien famously used it. Now, she designed that Conan O'Brien variation of it. She's done quite a few, but not a penny. Her name is Yiying Lu. And unfortunately, if you go to her website, you can read the sad story of selling the Twitter fail whale for $25 to a company now worth $18.5 billion. Wow! I don't buy tech stock as for ethical reasons. I don't want to, you know, if I have an investment in one of these companies, and can you trust me when I say I hate it or I like it? No. But so I find it fascinating to watch these prices and these people instant overnight millionaires. We talked yesterday on the last show about this calculator they put on Time Magazine. You know, the thing about Twitter, to understand really the value in Twitter comes from what? It comes from us, right? Not the viewers, the people who put the content on there. The tweeters, not the tweetees. It would be empty if it weren't for the several hundred million people who every day post little tweets up there. Twitter says there are 230 million active users, like the people who use it all the time, producing half a billion tweets a day. Whoa. They say those half billion tweets are delivered to 400, an average of 400 people each. 200 billion tweets a day are seen on Twitter. And how much does Twitter put in there? Zero. It's all us. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls. Come on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Outside the U.S. and Canada, you just Skype me. That's all you need to do. It'll still be free. Our website, might want to make a note of this, techguylabs.com. Reason being, if you hear something on the show that Leo mentioned something. Like, I got to put the Twitter calculator I was talking about up there. Leo mentioned something. Where is that? So you can figure out how much your tweets how much Twitter owes you, in fact, from its public offering for your tweets. The number and value of the tweets, they estimate about 12.5 cents per tweeter eyeball. So, for instance, they owe me $42,000. Who's the number one Twitter user? All of this, by the way, be on the website, techguylabs.com. That's what I was. I think Katy Perry, right? Isn't she number one? I think she has 46 million followers. Let's see what she's worth. Katy Perry. So you enter in, how much does Twitter owe me? Katy Perry. She's got 5,000. She doesn't tweet that often. 5,227 tweets. She's been on Twitter only 1,724 days. That's hardly anything. She's brand new, practically. She does about three tweets a day. 46.9 million followers.
Good Lord.
That means 140 million potential eyeballs a day. They do. They're conservative. They say, but let's say a quarter of those are paying attention. It's probably more than that, but she's worth $4.3 million. That's what Twitter owes her for the contribution she's made to Twitter's value. $4.3 million. Me, I'm only worth $42,000. But I've been on Twitter 2,408 days. So there. 88. Yeah, send a bill to Twitter. See how that works out for you. So we'll put that link so you can figure it out.
I wonder if we could pay her to go away.
Hey, don't knock Katy Perry. She's my girl.
Are you joking?
Oh, watch the documentary about her. She's really sweet as can be. What, a little too sweet for you? A little too sugary, huh? Is that it? Oh, I love Katy Perry.
She's a little too everything.
You know what? Watch the movie. She did that documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually quite, it's one of the best documentaries.
With like a really stupid name.
What's your Twitter handle if you're so smart?
What do you mean if I'm so smart?
I'm going to see how much you're worth.
I didn't say anything. What's, that has nothing to do with anything.
H-B-A-L-M. A-L-M. At H-B-A-L-M. Let's do the math.
I really couldn't even name a song of hers. I just hate it.
Okay, so she, Twitter owes her millions, right? They owe you $3.
Well, so what?
You so big.
I'm sure I'm way more entertaining.
You've been on Twitter longer, but you don't tweet enough.
I haven't been.
You've been on Twitter like for 4 years, 5 years.
I'm more of a watcher. I use it for various jobs, you know, reading different websites. But thanks to Twit, I'm getting way more involved.
Yeah. Someday you'll be worth $4.
Yeah.
I mean, that's mean.
But you know, it's one of those things where it feeds on itself. So now that I've spoken to Becky and other people listen to the show, I'm getting more involved.
Can I just point out that you will get exactly the same amount of money from Twitter as Katy Perry will. So it all works out in the end. Zilch.
How's that?
Zip. Nada. Oh, you think Twitter's going to give anybody any money? No. Not even the woman who created the fail whale. Nothing. Love, you know, the massage therapist at Facebook is a millionaire because she took stock instead of cash in the early days.
Wow.
Same thing with the kid who painted the mural on Facebook's office wall. Multimillionaire. Who should I talk to first on this fine board here?
This is kind of an emergency. We have to talk to Mike in El Segundo. Maybe we'll help some
Here we come to the rescue. Mike, Leo Laporte.
Hi.
Hey, what's going on?
First, I'd like to alert all your listeners, if anyone will never, ever, ever, no matter what, give any personal information over the phone to someone who calls you, no matter how authentic they seem, even if the caller ID says it's actually the real customer service phone number for AT&T or whatever bank.
What happened?
I got a call about a week ago and on my cell phone, and not that many people have my cell phone number, so that was one thing that made me feel a little more secure right there. And the person knew my name. They knew my cell phone number. The caller ID indicated the official correct AT&T customer service phone number that I had in my own phone address book. So it showed up.
All of that stuff can be spoofed.
Right, and it was spoofed. And the person on the other end of the phone sounded just incredibly authentic. It was some kind of boiler room operation because I could hear a whole bunch of other people on phones in the background.
Wow.
So this is some incredibly large-scale operation attacking AT&T customers.
And what did they say? What was the story they gave you?
Okay, the story he gave me was also sound very authentic because I've been having problems with the quality of service with AT&T. And he said that the AT&T CEO is very concerned that they've been losing customers and regarding the quality of service, and they want to retain their customers. He claimed that they're putting in improvements at the local cell sites in my area. And he claimed that he said he wants to do a brief customer service survey if I would be willing to participate. So I said, sure.
I'd agree right there. Sure.
Yeah. And he only asked a few questions for me to rate from 1 to 10, 1 lowest, 10 highest, my opinion of AT&T and the quality of service, of my airtime service with AT&T, and he may have asked one or two other questions. And then afterwards, he said, and because I gave him the time to do that and to help their company, he said he was going to put a $40 credit. See, this is the inducement, a $40 credit for my next cellular phone bill. And then I don't recall if he already knew I had a second phone number in that account or if he asked me, but either way, he was going after the second account as well. And then I think he may have asked me for that number, I'm not sure. And then he said he'd also put a $40 credit on that one as well. So I go, oh my God, $40, $80. But then, see, they lead you in kind of, get you all to buy into it and believe it's all for real. And then
it sounds so far good. I might have been suckered by this one.
Yeah, and then he asked me for my zip code. And I said, well, you should know that already. And he said, well, yeah, but I have to verify.
Yes.
I have to show my employer that I'm doing my job, actually, that I'm doing it. So
they're really piling it on there.
Yeah, exactly. And
often these scams, by the way, they sound like they're from call centers because they are. And when they have downtime in some of these call centers, they'll actually assign people to these kind of scammy calls.
Yeah, well,
these are legit, often legit call centers. That's why they sound so good.
Yeah, so here's what happened. I'm very tech savvy. I listen to your show. I even remember you said in the past they can spoof the caller ID, but everything together seems so real.
Sure.
I got taken in. So then I can't believe that. And he then asked me for the last four of my Social Security number. I thought to myself, normally I never, ever, ever give that out to anyone. I say I'll call you back on your number that I know.
Oh, you're good. Yeah, you're good.
But what happened was
that's the rule, by the way. Don't give this stuff out unless you've called them.
Exactly.
Mike, hold on. We're out of time. But hang on. I want to finish the story.
Yeah, there's more to it.
Yeah, I'd like to hear it. I'd like to hear what the outcome was. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today, the Tech Guy Show, brought to you by our great friends at Hover.com. And I mean that when I say my friends, Elliot Noss and the crew over at Two Cows, are just fabulous. Their goal in life is to take businesses that just, aren't exactly customer friendly and reinventing them. And one of the first is domain name registration. That's what Hover.com does. Hover lets you pick a domain name and a variety of what they call TLDs, top-level domains, like, of course, .com's one. They also have .net, .org. They even have some of the weird ones, like .tv, .pro, .mobi, .biz. They just got .io. I kind of like .io, and, of course, country codes, too, .ca, .asia, .us, .uk. So when you come up with a name, you go to hover.com. Actually, I'm going to give you a better place to go, hover.com/techguy, and check that name out. If the .com is taken, as it often is, all the good names are taken, as they say, I'm going to hover.com/tech guy. They will make a suggestion in the .net domain. I think that's probably the next best thing. Everybody understands .net. Probably better than .tv. I'm often asked, twit.tv, is that twit.tv.com? No. If it were twit.net, people would probably know it. So go to hover.com/tech guy. What is your domain name? Chat room, give me a domain name for that you want me to register. Something you've wanted for a while. Twit.com is available? No. I should get it if it is. Let's do a quick search here. Twit guy, I would take that. Twitwin.com. Twitapp.com. I should take that. Actually, I should take that. So you see, it's going to give you the suggestions. Twit.yourn.com. Twit-games. In all the domain names. It's real. I have to say, so it's very easy. Once you sign up for hover.com, you'll see that the domain name management is fabulous. They're very simple, very clean. You can register a domain for yourself or your business, have your email forwarded. I highly recommend getting your own domain name and not using, you know, Yahoo or Gmail as your email address. You can use Yahoo or Gmail, but just have it go to myname@myaddress.com or whatever. And that way you can change and change the forwarding. That's why I use Leoville.com. Leoville's registered at Hover. In fact, I moved all my domains over to Hover with their simple domain name transfer service. Very easy, very quick. They also offer Google Apps. Now, this is a great way to get Google Apps through Hover. You know, the problem with, of course, getting it through Google is there's not much support. Basically, you're going to get everything at the same price you'd get it directly from Google. Gmail, Calendar, Drive, Docs, the whole package. You can add it to a new domain or one that you already own. You get 25 gigs of storage, of course, but you also get support from Hover, and they have mastered support. In fact, they have the best support people anywhere. You call them, you will not be put on hold. Your problem will be solved. This is a great solution for anybody. I found a lot of families use the Google Apps domain. It's a way to share stuff. 30-day free trial, hover.com. And if you decide to buy a domain name, I want you to use our offer code TECHGUY, and you'll get 10% off. 10% off standard domain names when you use the offer code TECHGUY. Great, no hold, no wait, no transfer phone support. During regular business hours, you'll speak to a live person who's empowered, eager to help. These guys are just great. I love them, and I know you will too. Just go to Hover, hover.com/TECHGUY, and take a look today. The best way to get your new domain name. Highly recommended. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were in the middle of a very interesting story. Mike and El Segundo got a call that sounded very real, like it was from AT&T Wireless customer support. They went through a bunch of stuff, offered him a $40 credit, asked for his zip code and the last four digits of your social. And because it sounded so believable, even though Mike listens to the show and he knows the rules, he gave it to him. What else happened?
Yeah, well, before I gave it to him, I asked him a few questions. I said, who is the CEO of AT&T? Because he said the CEO was concerned about quality of service, and he's having their employees do the calling, or he's having the calling being done. So he gave me a name. I didn't have time really to look it up. I should have, but it probably would have been the real name of the CEO. So these people do their homework. They do their research.
Really well prepared.
They sound so authentic. He even gave me the address of AT&T, which was probably the correct address. I asked him, are you an employee of AT&T? He said yes. I said, for how long? He said 8 years. I mean, they've got everything down so authentic, you can't even imagine it. It's just incredible. So then what happened was this last Friday, I get a call from the real AT&T. The same exact phone number shows up in caller ID.
Wow.
AT&T customer service only. This was the real ones, and they said they're calling me to ask if I ordered a new SIM card, replacement SIM card for my cell phone. And
now they have the information they need to call AT&T and pose as you.
Or to do it online. See, what happened was he actually verified and told me I gave him the correct last four of my Social Security numbers. So he was actually logging into my AT&T account on the internet.
As he talked to you.
As he was talking to me.
Yeah.
It was just, it's just incredible how they operate. So I said, no, I did not. And then the lady asked me if I was trying to order a new phone for another two-year contract extension.
It's good on them for calling you.
Yeah, they were good.
They must have been a little suspicious about it.
It's such a massive wholesale fraud right now going on. I think that's why they call me. I'm sure there were other customers before me that they got away with and that got totally taken.
Right.
But imagine if they had got a SIM card for my cell phone with international roaming data charges, they could probably put $30,000, $40,000 on 1 month's phone bill, right?
Sure, easy.
Yeah, and then they could have gotten a new phone that I ordered that I would not have received, but I'd be locked into a two-year contract that I do not want. I'm considering leaving AT&T because of the quality issues. But I'm not quite sure if it's my old cell phone causing it or their service or both. So I need to determine that. But this is just unbelievable. Now, here's the other problem is the last four of my social got out. I don't know if they're spreading it around, selling it or giving away or what.
Yeah, and that's a problem with – and I think that it's wrong for companies to use a social – in fact, it's illegal as an identifier or as a password. They often do the last four digits because, oh, well, then you're not using your home. But you cannot change your social easily.
That's correct. So what I had to do then is I immediately had to contact all my banks, financial institutions, everybody I do business with, and put on extra passcodes so the last four of my social will not be good anymore for access or to regain access if you lose it.
Wow.
And then also at the same time, my email service provider said when I logged in that there was something going on, some kind of unauthorized attempts to access my account, and I had to immediately change my password. So they probably, when they got onto my AT&T account, probably saw my email.
Yeah, I mean, once they get kind of bite you, they kind of look around and see if there's any other soft spots. But it's non-trivial. I mean, I get emails very regularly, almost daily, from accounts that I own saying, oh, your password reset is in place. And it's because people know my email address. But that doesn't get them very far. They still have to have access to my email.
That's right. There was one very famous person, computer security, I don't recall the name, and apparently anonymous. He made some challenge to Anonymous.
Oh, yeah. Remember tactical squatted him.
Yeah. They got into his email. From there, I think he used common or similar passwords.
Oh, you're talking Matt Honan. Yeah. Yeah. He's not a security expert. He's a writer for CNET. Good friend, or Wired now, I guess. Good friend of mine. And he got bit badly by, it wasn't his fault. He had strong passwords, but the lack of security at Apple and Amazon was what bit him. Both of those companies have modified how they do this. The weak spots of all of these, you can have strong passwords. You can be smart. You obviously listen to this show, Mike. You know what not to do. The weak points are these little things like secret questions, last four digits of your social. Those things are not very secure. And frankly, that's how people most often get bit. I always lie in the answers to my secret questions.
Same here.
Exactly. So you're smart. You know what to do. And you still got bit.
Yeah, and it gets worse than that. Okay, like when I talked to AT&T for my landline service to get a passcode put on for those accounts, then the gentleman told a customer service suggested I put a fraud alert.
Yeah.
But I'd already talked to banks, and they said, no, if you do that, you cannot refinance the real estate loan.
They don't like fraud alerts because it slows them down in offering you credit card offers.
Well, some
so do the fraud alert, and if you're going to do a refi, you just have to go through some extra hoops. They don't like it. They want everything to be easy peasy. Do the fraud alert. I don't think you're at risk at this point because the last four digits don't usually get people very far.
Right, right. But here, Bank of America told me they won't even do a refi if you have a fraud alert. And the full fraud alert goes for, I think, is it 5 or 7 years. There's a 90-day, like, temporary fraud
alert. That's the normal one, but you have a better one, I guess. Huh?
Well, there's one that you can do more permanent. I don't know if it's free or you pay for it, but there's one that's like 5 or 7 years.
That's a
years.
Freeze. That's different. In that case, they have to actually call you and ask for permission. And the bank may not like that. I can understand. But you know what?
America said they won't even do a refinance, period, if you have a fraud alert.
Well, shame on them. Shame on them, because there's lots of good reasons people have fraud alerts or freezes on their
right.
accounts.
We need more improvement in all the security and in the fraud alert system. All this needs to be vastly improved.
Shame on them. Bank of America, if that's true, that's shame on you. You know, I recently got a home loan. It is a nightmare since the banking collapse. You have to practically give them your firstborn. It's amazing. And so I think they're making rules to slow down these refis and the loans, but I'll tell you what, that must be illegal. I cannot believe that's legal. There's so many people who have, like you, legitimate reasons for keeping fraud alerts or even more importantly, freezes on their credit accounts. Those credit accounts are dynamite.
Yeah. Now, here's the other thing. How do they get my cell phone number, my name? Either someone hacked into AT&T or is an inside worker there or someone has access to it.
You say you never use that cell phone number for anything.
Oh, very, very few. Maybe like doctor's offices will have it, a dentist, you know, friends. Very few. Maybe some business I gave it to, you know, let it out or sold it. I also got a call trying to sell me oil and gas investments. Don't ever invest in that, everyone.
I'm gonna
to lose, and you really.
I got to move on, Mike. But hey, yeah. I do appreciate your letting people know, and this is absolutely right. In general, if you receive a call, I don't care if you. Oh, nobody knows this number. There's ways and ways. We see this all the time. Adobe's database just got hacked with 130 million addresses. Information, perhaps cell phone numbers in it. There's lots of ways people, bad guys, can buy this stuff. The fact that it came from an active call center, you heard people in the background, tells me this is very likely not an individual hacker, but this is a organized effort. And oftentimes comes from legitimate call centers. That's why these guys sound so good. They may even be working for AT&T in India or China or the Philippines. During, you know, the day, and then the call center stays open later and said, you want to make a little extra money to help us with this stuff. It's really a shame. There have been news stories. There's one here I'll link to in our website all about this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Matt in Berryville, Arkansas, or is it Alaska? AK is...
I'm in Arkansas.
Arkansas.
Actually.
You almost said I'm in Alaska, which would have really confused me. Hi, Matt. What can I do for you?
Well, I work for a local dealer for AT&T, so I just wanted to kind of make a comment on the last caller. I know from experience AT&T customer service will never call you for something like this. We do all of our communication with our customers through email and text message, and especially the surveys are sent via text message specifically for the purpose of security, you know, so that way the person who the survey would be about doesn't really know. We actually have an app available through the Google Play Store and also through the App Store on iPhones, where if you're having network issues, you can report those directly to us.
Yeah.
So, and another thing is, we'll never ask you for your zip code for verification. The only two things that customer service on the phone will ask you for is your phone number and the last four of your social.
Right.
And that's only whenever you call them.
Right.
So,
yeah, you know, I mean, I hesitate to say that you'll never get a real call from customer service. You might, but it's really important to be very careful. If somebody calls you, not to give out information. You know, I don't also give money to door-to-door solicitors. I don't give money to people who call me. You know, you just, it's too easy to, well, I'm really glad to talk about this because I think these scams are happening a lot. It's too easy for it to happen, and you just got to be careful. And a lot of our listeners perhaps didn't know this occurred. So thank you, Matt. I appreciate that. The IRS doesn't call you either. Microsoft doesn't call you either. These are very common scams. Don't fall for them.
Yeah, the only time we call you is whenever, you know, you have a phone show up in one of our stores.
Yeah, I hate to say, unless you're representing AT&T corporate, I'd hate for you to say we never call, because there may be cases where they call. I understand that your experience.
On occasion, whenever, like, you know, you have fraud on your account.
Right.
Or there was a fishy. You know,
well, that's the thing. I don't. You're not speaking for AT&T corporate, I'm sure, and so.
Oh no, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. I'm just from my personal experience and the classes that they have us take and everything.
Right.
They're so huge on customer information that 9 times out of 10 they won't, unless they're like, "Hey, wait, this doesn't look right." And
I think the companies now understand that this is not done, and you got to be careful about that. Hey, Matt, I appreciate it. Thank you for the call.
Hey, no problem, Leo.
All right, take care. I'm looking at a news story from Channel 11 in Atlanta. Exactly the same story as Mike just told. When Gwen Goodman looked at her cell phone, she saw the call was from AT&T Customer Care, so she thought it was okay to answer it. They wanted to give me a brief survey, ask a few questions, then they asked that I verify my ID with the last four digits of my social. I gave it to them along with my last name. After that, I felt just, I wanted to make sure I was talking to AT&T, so she was even suspicious. She logged onto her account. When I checked my email, I noticed the profile had changed for AT&T. The scammers had added an international account to their phone, her phone, and made $500 worth of calls. This is in Atlanta. AT&T says it's investigating. It's hard to track this stuff down because it comes from outside the U.S. And how are you going to track it down? Good news, she was given a credit for the $500 scam on her bill. AT&T responded well to this. For cell phone customers, Channel 11 says, never believe the caller ID. It can be anybody. It's easy to spoof a cell phone number. It's easy to spoof an email address. So it's very tempting to say, well, you know what? Humans are pretty trusting. And I hate for us to become all cynical and untrusting. You see it all the time. People don't let the kids play outside anymore because we're so scared. But trust your gut. It's kind of a shame, isn't it? Will in Springfield, Illinois. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Will.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Well, yes. Well, I'm just asking because I'm calling on my Galaxy S3 and it's frozen right at the moment. So I'm
how interesting. The phone crashed, but we can still hear you.
The reason why I'm calling is because I've had this Galaxy S3 for a little bit over a year, and it's gotten to the point to where it's spontaneously rebooting on me.
Yeah, and freezing, apparently. It sounds like it's overheating or it's clearly got a problem, but I bet you, since it's more than a year old, you're not under warranty anymore.
No, it's not under warranty. When I put my hand on the back of the unit, it's not warm.
It's not warm. All right. This happens all the time. As you know, probably, I go through a lot of phones. I probably have a new phone every few weeks. And some percentage of them, not a high percentage, maybe 2 or 3%, are just bad. They reboot spontaneously. They crash. It seems to happen more with Android, although lately it's been happening with the iPhones. As they crank out more and more of them, my iPhone 5S reboots spontaneously. If it does, if it happens when you first get it, of course, bring it right back. After a year, you're kind of out of luck. There's not much you can do. My recommendation, if you want to see if you can fix it, like any computer, is to reinstall. And it's easy to do on a smartphone. You'll see a erase and reset command in your security settings on that Android phone. And I would try that. If not, bring it into the phone company. Because remember, they have you for 2 years. And they want to keep you for those 2 years. So bring it into the phone company. See if they'll give you a replacement.
One of the reasons why I'm calling is because if I sit there and I do a backup and I do a reset on the phone, which essentially takes it back to its version state, then I can do a restore from my backup, which is on my SD card.
That's right.
Is that sufficient to do, to just sit there and back up to my SD card?
Yeah. Yeah, it depends on what backup programming you're using because
I'm using Backup Pro, which isn't, my phone isn't rooted. I'm using a program called Backup Pro.
Yeah, the one I prefer comes from the, let me see if I can, they changed the name. It used to be Carbon. Let me look real quickly and see what the current name is. These guys really know their stuff. They make an excellent backup manager. It is called, what do they call it? Helium? Is it Helium now? Yeah. So it's this is the one I would use because this will sync, this will back up your apps and your settings. It's free, and it does not require a rooted device. Helium from Clockwork Mod. Well,
this may also take care of the problem if I do it, but AT&T did a recent update to my phone, something like 29 gigabytes of stuff there.
Megabytes, not gigabytes.
Yeah, megabytes.
Yeah.
It was a huge file. And afterwards, I have the hand up in my notification bar, the white hand that says that TalkBack is activated, but
yeah.
It's not.
Yeah, it could be they screwed it up. So I think resetting it probably is the first thing I'd try.
Okay.
Yeah, and then before you restore everything, make sure you've done all the system updates, then restore. This Helium is an excellent product. I would download this and do that. You can back it up to the SD card. It'll get every, without root, it'll get everything, the apps and your data to the card so that you can quickly get back to the way it was.
Can I say one thing before I go?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I wanted to say in the praise category that you are correct that the Katy Perry documentary is worth watching. And also, you shouldn't go against the guy who designed it. It's pronounced GIF, not GIF.
Oh, we could go on and on about that, but we're out of time. All right. GIF and Katy Perry's okay. Leo LaPorte, thanks for the call. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo LaPorte here, the tech guy. Oh, I got your iPhone right here, actually. I forgot. You don't need to order one. Heather Haman is, you're an iPhone 4 user, right?
Yeah.
I've got a beautiful, this is gold. Do you mind gold?
Let's.
You know, there's only one negative on this thing. It's running Android. You don't mind that, do you?
I really just want to hold it up to my hair, though, and see if it looks good.
It should, you know what? It should look fabulous next to your blonde tresses. This is for every from outside look, and it's not charged up. I don't think it's charged up where I would show you. It looks like an iPhone. It is not. It was sold a fella named Charbex, Nicholas Charbonnier. He's from an ARM site that they're very interested in ARM phones and so forth. It's called, I've got his card.
It's an ARM phone.
So they're all ARM based. That's the name of the processor. ARMDevices.net. Thank you. Charbax, we call him in our chat room. So he goes to Shenzhen, China, where the iPhone is made every month, and brings back devices. This is not an iPhone. It looks like an iPhone. It has a lightning connector. When you boot it up, it looks exactly like iOS 7. Even the apps look like iOS 7. It's actually an Android device sold for under $50 in China. And I don't think it's intended to fool the owner. I think the owner can tell it's not an iPhone. But it's intended to fool the owner's friends.
Right.
Who think, wow, you're a big shot. You have an iPhone. We also have a Nokia phone, the 1020. Oh, it's only the latest stuff. And a Galaxy Note 3. They're amazing clones. So
that's
this is.
What they do
I
really
told you
really
I'd give
well.
You a new iPhone. This is the one I meant.
Well,
$50 Android device.
Whatever.
Oh, too late. You got my credit card. Shoot. This is the. I'll just show you. Everybody on the radio, you'll have to imagine. But doesn't that look like an iPhone? Doesn't that look like a Lumia 1020? I mean, they make it exactly the same. But to their credit, they don't say Nokia on the back. It says something like Klotkud. I don't know. Must be a. Oh, wait a minute. That's Android upside down. It does say Android in the back. So they're not trying to fool the buyers. The buyers know this is not a Galaxy Note 3, despite the fact that it's got the faux pleather with the stitching on the back, and it's got the same size screen, and it's running even the Samsung-like apps. The idea is I think it's to fool your friends. So like,
yeah, well, as with everything they make in China, fake Burberry, fake Louis Vuitton.
It's a status thing.
My friend flies over there all the time, and she's coming back with these cool little sneakers that are Dr. Dre Beats, et cetera. They're awesome, and she got them for $20.
It's a big problem. Frankly, the U.S. trade representatives would like it if China cracked down a little bit more on these carbon copy cloners. But in this case, I don't think anybody's fooled. I think that they understand they're not really getting an iPhone. It just kind of looks like an iPhone. Kind of amazing. 8888 ask Leo, the world is full of scams. Scam day on the Tech Guy show. Jake is in Goldendale, Washington. Our next caller. Hi, Jake. Leo LaPorte, the Tech Guy.
Hello, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I guess fine. Hey, I'm wondering, I bought a couple of ASIC computers from MDG.
Okay.
And I hooked my new ones into a router.
Yeah.
Now, then I plugged my old computer in to get the Windows off to to open up Windows to download them into my new computers. And come to find out, ASIC got a hold of me because I was having problems. And they tell me there's a virus in my computers.
What was the symptom?
I don't know.
So how did he know?
Okay, he pulled up. I let him I used to access my screen.
Did you call him or did he call you?
No, I called him.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's a common scam, by the way. They call you and they say, "I see you got a virus. Let me get on your computer and fix it."
Well, they want $300 for a 3-year maintenance deal.
Yeah.
And he pulled up the screen and said Trojan on it.
Yeah, don't. You know what? No. Don't fall for this one. He said your router had a virus.
No, my computer, my new computer.
And he
had
pulled
a,
up a screen that said Trojan on it. Well, that's convinced me.
I was dealing with the Acer technology right off the bat. He was from Acer himself. The guy called the number that came with my box. If you need service or whatever.
You called the number that was on the box. It said for service.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, from Acer.
All right. And he ran. And this is a brand new computer?
Yeah. It's about a month and a half old.
And he said you got a virus on it.
Yes.
Why did you think? What were you calling them about? What was the problem you were presenting to them?
Well, the problem is it's an all-in-one computer. It seemed like it comes on by itself at nighttime.
And that's what you were calling about. My computer comes on at night.
Well, yeah. Well, was if I unplug the lead from the feed from the router, it stays.
Yeah.
Sleep all night.
Okay, so this is what the Acer guy should have done if he really was from Acer. He should have said, "Oh, sir, you have a BIOS setting called Wake on LAN, and it's the network is waking up your computer. Go into the BIOS setup and turn off Wake on LAN, and you will be fine." I do not know why he ran software and why he pulled up a Trojan, and what I'm very scared about is that he put software on your computer. So this is not an unusual thing for a computer to wake up. There's a setting in your BIOS called Wake on LAN. It's designed for a computer that's used on a corporate or business network so that the IT guy can get on the network and without walking down the hall to your computer to turn it on, he can wake it up from the network by sending a signal out to it and install software or whatever. This is very common. That is not the problem. And the fact that he then did something else makes me very nervous. If he were a true tech support guy, he would have known that. I am very concerned that he's done something to your system. This is a very common scam when they call you. They say, well, let me run the event manager. You see all those red entries on the event manager? You've got a virus, and I'm going to put some software on your computer to fix it. So I'm extremely nervous that he's done that to your system. I know you called the number that was on there. I'm worried that you still got something anyway. I'm not sure exactly what to say at this point. The best thing to do is if you have a local expert who can look at your system, someone you trust, you know, go down to Best Buy or somewhere you trust, have them look at your system, see if they can find the Trojan. I do not think that you have a Trojan on your system. I think that your problem really is that he put something else on your system. And this comes back to this whole thing I told you about, which is that these call centers, this is a real problem, may in fact be legitimate call centers, and they may be scammers at the same time. It just does not sound, this smells to high heaven. And now the problem is you don't know. So you need a local expert, Jake. You need to find somebody who knows what he's doing, and you need to have him sit down. If you want to kind of try to figure it out yourself, first of all, if he installed software on your computer, absolutely, you're dead. You've got to reinstall. You've got to wipe the drive and reinstall. If any third party installs software on your computer that you don't absolutely trust with your life, you've got to start over. You've got to start over. But assuming that he didn't put any software on your computer, you can run the Microsoft Malicious Software Removal Tool. It's on every current Windows machine. You click Start. Click Run in the Start... oh, it's Windows 8. He doesn't have start. You got to run MRT and you do a thorough scan on it and see what Microsoft finds. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's scam day. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Everybody getting scammed. Coming up in a few minutes at 33 and a third after the hour, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, with a little photographic myth busting and an assignment to get you out there with your camera or your camera phone. So just to, you know, I can't really go much farther helping our last caller because he really needs to take it somewhere where they know what they're doing and can scan it for a virus. I know you called the Acer number and I don't know how this happened, but I know it does sometimes happen. I believe you got scammed. The guy should have done a simple fix. He could even have walked you through it without accessing your computer. In fact, he would have had to because it's a BIOS fix. You can't do a remote access BIOS fix. Instead, he, and this makes me very nervous, pulled up a screen on your system that said Trojan using remote access. As soon as you give somebody remote access to your computer, you're giving them the keys to the kingdom. And unless you absolutely trust them, and the fact that you called an Acer number does not mean you should absolutely trust them, makes me extremely nervous. I want you to take it to somebody smart, have them do a thorough virus scan. You can run the malicious software removal tool from Microsoft. I've put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com where you can download that program and run it. Do a thorough scan. You should also have a good antivirus. Our sponsor, ESET, is a good choice, but if not, you can get the free Microsoft Security Essentials. Scan it thoroughly. I feel like that's, it just doesn't smell right. And boy, I think I have a pretty good nose for this stuff. Denny Pasadena, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Denny. Tell me you're not getting scammed.
I am not getting scammed.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, Leo, but I am trying to enter the 21st century with the smartphone.
Oh, good. So you'll be able to get scammed later.
I thought I had decided on a note, but you kind of are talking me into that next.
I like the Note 3, too. Now, this is the Galaxy Note. It's a giant phone, 5.5 inches.
Yeah.
And it has a stylus. So the Note is good for people who want lots of screen real estate. Maybe they're doing text data entry, you know, writing with a pen, or they're drawing sketches. Are you an artist?
No, but I am a note taker.
And you like taking notes longhand?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the Note will let you do that. And it does a pretty good job of recognizing it, but really you don't need to. You can just store those handwritten notes. But remember, you're going to have to write pretty big. It's not like a pad of paper. Well, it is. It's like a small pad of paper. Now, the reason I like the Moto X is it's a little different. You know, the Note's advantages are you can add an SD card so you can expand the memory. You can buy extra batteries. So if the battery life's excellent on it to begin with because it's giant. You know, the bigger the device, the more size, the more room there is for a battery. So there's a big old battery in that thing. So you're going to easily get all day. But if you wanted, you can buy a second battery, keep it charged. You can get 2 days. And those are nice advantages. It's big in the hand, and sometimes people think, oh, I look kind of silly holding it. It never bothered me. I was a big Note fan.
Yeah. Well, when you say Moto X, is that the Nexus 5, or is that...
No, it's not. So there's basically five very good phones out there right now that you could choose from. There are actually six. There are five Android phones and an iPhone, the 5S. But let's look at the Android choices. The googly Google, Google-ish choice, the one that's all Google, is the Nexus 5. That just came out. It also happens to be the least expensive of the bunch at $350. Also not expandable, also no external battery, but it is a 5-inch screen, a beautiful 5-inch screen. And the reason people like the Nexus 5 is, well, they're twofold. One is the price, but the other is it's not got any carrier additions on it. It doesn't have any... manufacturer editions. It's a pure Google experience, and it will be up to it's the first phone to use the latest version of Android 4.4, and it will always have the latest version for the next year or two on it. So that's why people love it. It's really geeks who love this. The Moto X is made by Motorola. That's a Google company, but unlike the Nexus 5, it has additional features, and it's full priced. It's $600 or $700 unsubsidized. Yeah. The Moto X, though, I like. Again, no removable battery, no additional memory, but it has some nice features. It knows when you're driving, and it will send a text saying, I'm driving, call you later if you want. Doesn't have to. It knows when you're in a meeting, won't ring when you're in a meeting. It knows when you're sleeping. This is, to me, this is a big feature. I said, don't disturb me between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m., and it doesn't do any, makes no noises. Love that.
Yeah.
It has a nice little sleep feature, though, on the screen. The screen slowly pulses. If there's text or whatever, you could see that a text came in. You could see what time it is. You could talk to it. You could talk to the Nexus 5, too, and using Google Now, tell it you want, you know, searches and so forth.
Yeah.
Then the other big ones that are very popular, the HTC One and the Galaxy S4 and the Galaxy Note 3. Samsung's phones, the Note 3 and the S4, tend to have a lot of Samsung stuff.
Yeah.
They put a lot of their own software. In fact, Samsung seems to be moving in a direction away from the pure Google experience. They think it's a differentiator. To me, it's that there's a little more stuff than I really want. It'll watch your eyes move and scroll the screen, depending if you're looking up or down. If you look away, it'll pause YouTube. I mean, you don't have to use any of these features, but they are on the phone, and you can't remove them, so they take up space.
Oh, okay.
So, but I think all of these phones, all six phones, are excellent phones. None of them will disappoint you. And the difficulty is choosing because there's slight differences. Why were you attracted to the Note 3?
Well, the note-taking, but you kind of scared me with that additional stuff.
Yeah, you know, there's a golf. So the camera is a good example. There's seven or eight special camera modes. There's a golf mode that will show your golf swing, you know, move by move. That's great if you're a golfer, but I don't know how often I'm going to use that. And frankly, it takes up space. And, so there's a lot of stuff like that, like the eyeball tracking, you know. But on the other hand, there's some great stuff that uses the S Pen. That's their stylus. You can hover the S Pen over a control, and it'll give you additional information. When you remove the pen, it sees that you've removed the pen, and it launches a note taker. Can you go to a store and play with them?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
I would definitely do that.
As far as a prepaid plan... can I put, well, it sounds like Nexus 5 would be the ideal one.
If you get a Nexus 5 and you go to T-Mobile, I think you're going to get the most, if T-Mobile works well in your area. And this is, by the way, my advice to everybody. First, see which carriers you can use. So if T-Mobile is good in Pasadena, then that's okay. But if there's, you know, if it's not, then don't get a Nexus 5. You can use a Nexus 5 with AT&T or T-Mobile. But both have prepaid plans that you can use so you don't have a contract. It is an unlocked phone. You could take it to Europe, put somebody else's SIM card in it. There's a lot to be said for that. $350, you own it outright.
So I can take it to one of those small companies like a Page Plus or a...
It has to be, yes, if it's a GSM service. There are CDMA versions of the Nexus 5. Sprint sells one. But you're going to get it from Google at $350. You're going to get the GSM version. That means you have to be with a GSM carrier. On the big carriers, it's T-Mobile and AT&T. But, yes, some of the smaller carriers will also work.
Okay.
I think T-Mobile's a great choice. You know, they have really a good variety of plans.
Yeah, well, I'm not a techie per se. So you said Nexus 5 was like for geeks.
Hang on a sec. I got to take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our Tech Guy podcast brought to you by our good folks, our good friends at Ring Central. It's kind of a interesting story. I found Ring Central because of Russell. This was before they were advertising with us. We had to set up a phone system. I've mentioned this before at the Brick House, and I didn't know where to go or what to do. I didn't want to go to the phone company to do it. And Russell said, hey, I installed Ring Central. I've installed Ring Central for many of my clients. He's a contracting IT guy, and you should try it. So we did. We set it up. We got our Ring Central phones, the whole thing. And then like 2 weeks later, out of the blue, Ring Central says, hey, would you like to do ads for us? Yeah, I would. Here we are more than 2 years later, still thrilled with our... It's a cloud-based phone system, no PBX in the basement. And because it's all digital, Ring Central is so easy to set up, so easy to use, and so affordable. It is a complete business solution in the cloud for you. You get everything you need. Our producers, for instance, get their voicemail messages in their email. They completely can customize the call handling. You could send and receive faxes straight from your email, from your PC, your smartphone, or your tablet. No fax machine in the Brick House, baby. In fact, the new faxes, if we get faxes, will arrive in our email. So we stay on top of business. You can preview and print the faxes, design cover sheets, sign the faxes electronically right from your computer. Can I tell you how great this was when we were buying that house? There is no fax machine at the Brick House. There's Ring Central, and I love it. As low as $20 per month per user, you can start right now. We've got a 30-day risk-free trial and a special offer just for you, my listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to a total of 20 phones. Find out why RingCentral is the most popular cloud-based phone system in the world. It's so great. The apps, everything. Just, it's a great package. And our employees love it. 800. Actually, most of them, I can't tell you the truth, don't even know. They just figure, you got the phone company, right? No. It's RingCentral. 800-543-9980, 800-543-9980, or go to ringcentral.com. Use the promo code TWIT, 800-543-9980, ringcentral.com. Somebody's in the chat room saying, does Russell still work for you? Yes. Well, we love, Russell is the, is you see him around. He's the greatest. We love him, and that was a hell of a good recommendation. ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. Chris Marquardt is here, our photo expert, chrismarquardt.com, discoverthetopfloor.com. He is the guru, the expert on digital photography. Hello, Christoph.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
I am well. We're going to learn a little bit about something called high key and low key. I know low key because I saw the Thor movie, and that's not that low key.
Well, first of all, if you want to bring up some visuals, that I've collected a few pictures on Flickr on tftf.com/histogram. It goes to a little gallery from other people, some pictures that other people have done, and some are high key, some are low key.
We talked about histograms last week, didn't we?
We did, and I want to link it up. I want to link that up because it kind of helps drive the point home. What is high key? What is low key? Now, high key are pictures that are mostly on the bright side, that have lots of white in them, lots of bright tones in them. Low key pictures, one that has mostly darker tones. And the myth I want to bust today is that you need special equipment to take these kind of pictures.
I've seen these settings occasionally, but I don't even know what's going on with high key and low key. You're high key, aren't you? Your video is high key. It's like there's a little bit of color, but it's very bright.
That's your TV doing that.
Oh, okay.
You have it on high key setting.
I have it.
The trick is to learn how to read the light and then how to see that reflect in the histogram. And here's what you do for a high key picture. You put your subject in front of a bright background, or you find something that is bright, and you make sure that the subject is well lit. Now, even light helps really good when you want to do a high key picture that's mostly on the bright side. Outside on an overcast day is really good in front of a white wall if you want to do a high key portrait or something. If you're inside, use some flash, but make sure you bounce that flash off the ceiling. You want indirect light. You don't want this direct light that hits the subject right in the face and creates harsh shadows. You want really soft shadows. And then here comes the trick. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. The histogram, that's what shows you the distribution of the light in your photo. This is little mountains, little hills on your display when you switch them on. If that is leaning towards the right, if that's at about 3/4 to the right, it's leaning to the right, that means you have a picture that is more on the high key side. If the camera does not get that right, and there's a good chance that the camera doesn't get it right, that's where you want to do exposure compensation upwards. So you want to make this whole thing a bit brighter than the camera thinks it should be. That happens when you point the camera at something that is just bright, you know?
This is why
you try to darken it down.
As important as it is to have an eye and a creative mind, you also have to understand your tools, because you may say, oh, I have a vision of how this could look, but you have to know how to make it happen.
Yes.
And with a digital camera, the tools are complicated.
No, not really. No.
Think it's easier than with film?
It's the same as with film, pretty much. Exposure works exactly the same. So for a high-key picture, you want that histogram to lean to the right. And the way you do it is you use what's called exposure compensation.
So many cameras will allow you.
Well, most of them will do that.
The button half down. Now you're getting what the camera says is, average exposure. It's 50-50. It's right in the middle. The histogram's exactly. evenly balanced. Now, in many cases, there's a dial, a button, a knob where you can say, okay, that's nice, but what I want to do is I want to take it two steps brighter or two steps darker.
Exactly. So you compensate for what the camera tries to do. And with a low-key picture, it's pretty much the same, but on the other side, you are doing a low-key picture without any special equipment. It's really easy. You find a dark room or something that's not very well lit, and then you use one light source and you put that light to the side and behind the subject so that it's outside of your field of view or outside of the field of view of the camera, so you don't see it in the frame, but it shines at the subject. And what that will do is it will create a nice contour on the subject, a bright contour that defines the subject. And some of those pictures that that I've showed you here have that, where the light source is kind of behind them on the side, and you get this mostly dark picture, but then the strip of light defines the subject. And again, the camera will try to get this somewhere in the middle. The camera will try to make this a 50-50 medium bright picture, but you know better, and this is where you compensate. And you know this has got to be a dark, low-key picture. So you tell the camera, exposure compensate downwards. So go to -1, -2, whatever the exposure compensation lets you do.
So it won't be a perfect exposure from the point of view of the camera, but it will be the vision that you have, what you're looking
at. And that's exactly, that's what you want to have, because the camera does know what you want to do in that situation.
Right, right.
The camera has a real hard time sometimes figuring things out, especially if it is a low key or a high key, because those are so outside of the middle that the camera will just not get it right. So this is where you kind of give the camera a bit of a little hint which direction to go.
Well, this is an interesting thing, because our point and shoot cameras are very good now. You turn them to program or auto, you press it halfway down, and then you press it all the way down, and it's going to get, you know, kind of a basic picture every time. It's going to be able, you know, it's going to be in focus, it's going to be exposed, but it's not, but it doesn't, that's now creative input on your part. So this is an idea of where you look at something and say, boy, the silhouette or the highlights on this would be very interesting just by themselves. Or maybe I would love to see it like it's in a snowdrift and it's all white. I mean, then that's where you would use exposure composition. The nice thing on a digital camera is you can look at the back and see what you're getting, right?
Yeah, perfectly right. And the camera will get it right 90% of the time. That's the nice thing. These cameras today are really smart. I mean, if you shoot with a smartphone, you're almost guaranteed to get something that you can use. But there's this little tiny, these 10% that where you really want to give, where you really want to take a picture that is not really, where the camera cannot really do a good job. And there you want to learn about how to lift it up or push it a bit down and kind of get the picture where you want it to be. Just remember, high key means you want to compensate upwards, and low key means you want to compensate downwards. If you can keep those two things in mind, and if you learn how to do exposure compensation on your camera, then it should be fairly easy.
Have you played with at all the Google Plus Auto Awesome and all of the stuff Google Plus does?
Not yet. Actually, what I did is on Google Plus, I switched that off. Because
you didn't want it. Well, you're a pro. Yeah.
Most of the time when I submit a picture, I have a vision for it and I know where it should be. And you can switch it off. Somewhere in the settings, there's a switch where you can just untick a box. And maybe I should switch it on again and see what Google... I mean, Google tries to be smart about these things. And with I think with their acquisition of Nix Software, they bought a whole lot of expertise in the field of image manipulation. And a lot of those algorithms from these guys, who, by the way, come from Germany... is now in those products and in the Google engine that kind of works on those pictures. So it's
kind of
interesting.
It's kind of fun.
This is going and especially the animated GIF kind of thing, when you have a series of pictures and it makes those into a little mini movie and things. That's really fun to play with.
For people like me, it's fun to see what Google does. And then you have different settings now, and there's all sorts of stuff you can do. And it's kind of fun to just play with it. They've got some pretty amazing effects.
And that is perfectly good for a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's like
that's all
like
I need.
Automatic or a stick shift, you know. Yeah. It's really a matter of choice how much control you really want there.
So here's the deal. Why don't you play with high key and low key with a photo assignment for the next few weeks? We're asking you to take pictures of
fast,
and
it's got to be a picture that gives you that feeling of fast, that really conveys that thing, that word, the meaning behind it.
Fast. Mm. So what you do, take a photo. You can do as many, upload as many as one a week to our Tech Guy group. Do use the tag fast. The Tech Guy group you'll find on Flickr. So go to Flickr.com and search for the Tech Guy group. You have to be a Flickr member, but that's free. And we will, in a couple of weeks, review three of the best fast photos. Follow Chris Marquardt at discoverthetopfloor.com and every week right here. Thank you, Chris.
Absolutely.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More to come right after this. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888. Ask Leo. We were talking about Android phones earlier. Our caller wanted to buy, well, he was confused, conflicted, didn't know whether he wanted a Note 3, a Nexus 5, a Moto X. Didn't seem to be interested in an iPhone at all. I think that, you know, he said, you said it's a geek phone, the Nexus 5. I mean that only in the sense that it seems to be the geeks really appreciate a pure Google experience. And Samsung is really trying to win over a less sophisticated audience that is wowed by things like, you know, ooh, it follows my eyes and scrolls. Geeks, I don't know if they care that much. Doesn't mean it's not appropriate for a normal person. In fact, I think the Nexus 5 is a good choice for everybody. But because it's from Google, it doesn't have the marketing budget, you don't see the advertising for it, maybe the awareness isn't out there. It's really Google's developer phone, and yet I think an excellent, pure experience. Very, very good. Very, very good phone. I think between it and the Moto X, I think those are the two I would certainly look at. It's hard, though. I mean, I like the giant screen in the Note 3, too. Max in Palos Verdes, you're next. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hey, Leo. Congratulations on your new home.
Thank you.
I love your show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I have a couple of daughters. One's 13 and one's 15. And they... I can't stop doing homework, or they're actually watching movies on the internet, or what is going on?
Let me tell you. Okay, my daughter's 21 now, so I've watched this whole thing happen.
Good.
So teenagers used to be, in our generation, on the phone.
Totally.
Right?
That's right.
They would have the phone cable all curled all around them on the phone, you know, kicking back their legs. And then you will never believe what he and your hair. And they just talk for days, and the phone would be tied up. Parents would go crazy. Some parents, if they were very lenient, would get second lines. Most parents would just say, hang up the phone. I'm trying to call here. We're waiting. So, but that all changed probably like 1998, 99, early 2000s with Instant Messenger. Suddenly the kids were able to instant message each other with first ICQ, then AOL Instant Messenger, Microsoft Messenger. And they did that like crazy. Now, they may still be on the phone and messaging. You know, there's these transitional periods where they do both. Then the kids started using FaceTime and Skype to do video calls. Then the kids start using Google Hangouts and other tools to do multi-party video calls. So now they're sitting, they're doing their homework, the computer's over to their left, they've got an instant messenger going, perhaps a chat room going, and they may also have four other kids in video cameras looking at each other like they're all together.
Yeah.
They have music blaring in the background and maybe even the TV on, and this is completely normal.
Okay.
I watched it happen. My daughter was a straight-A student. I thought, Abby, how can you focus on your homework when you've got all this cacophony going on?
Okay, so I'm able to kind of shut that down because the 1 o'clock in the morning is like 2.
Oh, yeah. No, this is a nice thing. Most routers will give you access controls that let you say, as I did, 10 o'clock or actually maybe even earlier, 9 o'clock, internet is off. And I always, my wife and I would look at each other and I'd say, okay, I'd look at the clock, wait for it, 9:59, yeah. 10 o'clock, Dad!
Yes.
Dad! I'm sorry, honey, it's 10 o'clock, the internet is off, go to bed. So definitely do that, yeah.
So, but I have a Mac system, so I have the, you know.
Airport does it very well. In fact, the airport, the Apple wireless will let you say mom and dad's computer can stay online, but the kids' computers are off at 10, and they can't do anything about it.
Okay, so airport has it built in then.
Yeah, you have to go in the advanced settings, use the airport utility, go in the advanced settings, and it'll be access control. They actually made it less good. It used to be you could say you had more complicated rules. You could say every computer except this one is off at 10. Now you have to go computer by computer, and you'll go by something called MAC address, which is a unique identifier for each computer. So at some point, you'll need to go through all the computers, get all the MAC addresses, and say, this one is off at 10, this one's off at 11, Dad's computer is always on, things like that.
Okay, okay.
And then lock all down your router with password protection. Now, if your kids are super sophisticated, if they're smart enough to do MAC address spoofing, you're out of luck.
Well, what I do is I just put in two routers, and then I went and got. I mean, it's
just a, you unplug it.
Yeah, that's what I did.
That works even better. There's no way around that.
Yeah. So you know, I mean, that's what I got going now. But I'm trying to.
You can get a little more sophisticated. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's all parents should know about OpenDNS. OpenDNS.com. They allow you to do even more. It's really great stuff. I also put OpenDNS on there because it'll block. You know, you can say, I don't want them going to adult sites. I don't want them going to gambling sites, whatever you want to control. And you're controlling it at the router. It's a much more effective way than putting filtering software on the individual computers. It's very effective.
So it's a program you download?
No, that's the beauty of it. You change the something called the DNS settings in your router. That's the phone book that your router uses to look up internet addresses. You know, when you say yahoo.com, it needs to go to a number. So it looks it up in the using the domain name system phone books. OpenDNS, you're going to have them take over DNS. And then can completely control. I mean, a lot of schools, a lot of businesses use this. It's very effective. They have free services as well as paid services. The home VIP is $20 a year, but you can use the free home stuff. And it does a lot of very good stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I really like it.
There.
Yeah, and that also, I believe, has time controls as well. Might be easier to do it at that with that.
That's perfect. That's
but I love it. There's phishing protection for Dad. Their content filtering, it's very flexible. This is the one I recommend. Parents use, a lot of businesses and schools use it as well.
Yeah, because some guy just called me last week and wanted my, said it's from AT&T and wanted my Social Security.
Is that true? Are you joking? Be careful out there, I'll tell you. Your reason is there's a lot of money now that these scammers can make. And, of course, whenever somebody can make a lot of money, you know, watch out because they'll try to scam you.
Sure.
Hey, Max, great to talk to you.
You have a great show. I really appreciate
it. Thanks. And you're obviously a great dad.
Thanks. Take care.
Keep up the good work. Yeah. You know, I'm a really believer in the fact that kids need to have a private space. You know, they need to have a place they can hang out with their friends, all of that stuff. I don't want you to spy on your kids unless there's a real cause for concern there. You know, you believe there's some actual danger. You know, in that case, of course, as a parent, you have every right and even a duty, I think, to protect your kids. But, you know, use this stuff judiciously. But it's not inappropriate for you to turn off the internet at 10 o'clock. It's bedtime. You don't need the internet after 10. You know, it's bedtime. You know, yeah, you can go up there and yell at them, I guess. You know, that's fine. But this is so much easier. Howard's in Chatsworth, California. Hi, Howard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Yeah, I got a question for you. On my daughter's Mac, we're running Snow Leopard. And when it goes to sleep, if I wait like 24 hours, it won't wake up. I have to hit the reset button in the back.
I hate it when that happens.
I know, and I've tried to research of what's wrong. I set the PROM, I think it's called. I've done a couple of things, but it's still...
Yeah, you reset the PROM, you hold Command, Option, PR, and reboot, and let it bong a couple of times. That didn't fix it, huh?
No, so I'm kind of lost of...
Make sure you've got all the updates, but, you know, I think that this is a problem occasionally, and I don't know what the fix is. We're going to take a break for news. Let me see if I can find out. Keep listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, Hour 3 of the Tech Guy Show for this beautiful day. Hope you're having a good time. I know there are some of our callers who are not. It's been Scam Sunday. People are getting scammed right and left. It's amazing. Howard, we were talking to Howard in Chatsworth. I just want to wrap this up. Howard, his daughter has a Mac with Snow Leopard. How old is that Mac?
I would say 3-4 years old.
Yeah, it doesn't have any other difficulties. It's just the issue, he said, the presenting issue was that if you let it sleep for a while, you can't wake it up.
Yeah, it seems like if I put it to sleep, let's say I wait 2-3 hours, no problem, it wakes back up. But when it sleeps overnight, I have to hit the on and off button.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, I've experienced that too. I think it's just a Mackie kind of thing to do. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It might get better if you update to Mavericks. It's free to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not.
What's the difference between Snow Leopard and Mavericks?
Oh, yeah, a lot.
A lot.
In fact, I would not update to Mavericks right now. I'd wait for a couple more updates because Mavericks has trouble with mail. They just updated the mail because they broke things. There's some things that are broken on Mavericks. Yeah. What I think is happening is that the Mac, when it's just pure sleeping, you just wake it up, you move the mouse, you type a key, and it wakes up. But I think after a certain period of time, it hibernates. It goes to a deeper sleep, and I think it's just not waking up for the hibernate.
Well, you know, and it's funny. It didn't do that in the beginning. I would say it started to do that about within the last year. In the beginning, everything was fine.
I would look at your power saver or energy saver preference pane and maybe take a look at some of the settings here. Maybe not put hard drives to sleep. Maybe not enable power nap. You could play with those settings. The default may not be, or try restoring the defaults. Maybe you did play with those settings, and maybe restoring the defaults will fix it. That's the only place you can really mess with it. Make sure you have the latest firmware on there. I think that's pretty important. But Apple will push those firmware updates automatically. If you've got one pending, that's the kind of thing a firmware update fixes.
Right.
Apple's very good about, even if you don't have extended support, you can absolutely call Apple Care and tell them this, and they may have some notes about things you should try.
Okay. Now, it doesn't hurt, I guess, if...
What you're doing is harmless. I don't usually press the reset button. What I do is I press and hold the power on off, and it powers down, then it powers up. And that happens to me maybe a couple of times a month, and I don't know why.
Huh.
I don't think it's unusual.
Okay. Okay.
Maybe I'm just putting up with it.
Yeah, I'm kind of at that point now, and I think she is too.
Yeah.
She says, Dad, just leave it alone.
Yeah, just, reset it. By that time, it's far enough asleep to reset. You don't want to reset it when it's in the middle of a disk write, but it sounds like it's asleep, like really asleep, so I don't think it's harmful.
Okay, well, great. Thanks a lot, Leo.
Hey, thanks for the call. Good to talk to you.
Take care.
Take care. You know, it's funny because computers are computers. You know, sometimes people say, oh, a Mac should never have problems. No, a Mac is a computer. It has problems like any other computer. It's heir to all the ills that other computers are heir to, I'm afraid. Jennifer, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for being so very patient.
My pleasure. I'm calling because I have an LG Optimus cell phone. And I've recently been having the problem where my voicemails and text messages are arriving days late.
That's not the phone's problem. That's your
phone or service.
That's the service problem. That's not your phone problem.
Okay, so I can call my carrier.
Call AT&T or Verizon or whoever and say, hey, what the heck? Is it Verizon?
It's Sprint.
Sprint.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the carriers go through this occasionally. I don't think it's your phone.
Okay.
There were issues. I remember this happening with Verizon, and it was a setting you could fix in the APN. I think the APN settings. But I would just call. I would call Sprint. If you know, it's a pain to call tech support at any of these wireless carriers. But sometimes a faulty setting can give you some trouble, and they may know.
All right. So just call Sprint and
tell them that. Yeah. It happened to a Verizon phone of a friend of mine. And I remember that, what did we fix? It was a weird kind of confluence of things that we were able to fix in the settings. Truth is, it's probably happened to many people on Sprint, and they probably have in their notebook somewhere. If you get a good support person, they'll go, oh, yeah, here's what you do. You might have to... You know, it might have to reboot and do some strange settings and stuff. By the way, this is something T-Mobile says this. It's so interesting. I've never seen any of the other phone carriers say it, but it's true. T-Mobile, they have a troubleshooting area. They say, don't forget to restart your phone once in a while. Phone's just like a computer. And I don't mean like make the screen black and turn it back on again. I mean press and hold the on-off button until you see power off and power it all the way down and back up again. Just like any computer, they benefit from reboots. Sometimes the memory gets, you know, munged up, jammed up. Look, Heather's doing it right now. It's good. Just press and hold. If it's an iPhone, it'll say slide to switch off. Do that. It's not a bad idea. I would say every few days to do that. Mechman's saying, and he's absolutely right, that if you go into the Sprint store, you might get more. You know, people are nicer if you go in and you see them face to face. They might spend a little time with you. I do think that this can be a problem. I had this problem with Verizon. I don't remember the exact fix. I think it had to do with a setting in the phone, and I think you can fix this. 8888 Ask Leo. Next, Michelle in Studio City, California. Hi, Michelle.
Is it Micheline?
Oh, pardonnez-moi, Micheline.
Oui.
Comment ça va? Bienvenue.
D'accord.
Now let's switch because that's all my French right there. Hi, Micheline.
Hi, Leo. I have to tell you, I know very little about computers, but the little bit that I know, I owe it all to you.
If you keep talking like that, I'm just going to melt. Thank you. Merci bien.
Oh, je vous en prie. So I have a question. I have, because of you, I have Carbonite on my computer.
Oh, very good.
And I bought it for 3 years. And yet, every time I get on my computer, I receive a reminder with an orange shield and an exclamation point mark in there. Your computer is not backed up.
Oh, I hate Microsoft because they don't understand Carbonite.
Ah.
So that's the Microsoft Security Center. And actually, I don't hate. This is a good thing to do. Because Microsoft, they'll do this if you don't have an antivirus, if you don't have a backup, but it's easy to turn the warning off. So in your system tray down below, there'll be that, you know, little flag.
Yes.
Right-click on that, open the Security Center, you'll see the warning, and you'll see a way you can disable it and say, you know, I know you don't understand Carbonite because it's not a program running on the computer exactly. It doesn't know that that's backup.
Uh-huh.
So you just, they want you, it's fine. Just tell them, disable this. I got it from here.
And where do I get that? On the bottom of
it? Yeah, so you have that task bar at the bottom of the window. In the right, we call that area in the right the system tray.
Oh, yes.
And in the system tray, you'll see that little flag, that warning. And just right-click on that, open Security Center, and you can disable the backup warning. You can disable any of those warnings.
Oh, wonderful. And then I have the same thing that says, repair Windows error, highly recommended. Is it the same thing? Stop download.
No, that's a different one.
Ah.
So, again, when you open the Security Center, you'll see all of those warnings. That warning you should listen to, and you should download whatever they say.
Really, I should?
Yeah.
Oh, good, because I've been ignoring it for days now.
Isn't it funny how we put up with stuff like this on our computers?
You know, really, because you don't know, especially a person like me, I have no idea what.
Right. So you just let it go on, you know, for months.
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad you called, Micheline. Yeah.
One more question.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. We've got to take a break. We'll be right back. Talking to the lovely Micheline.
Oui.
Oui, oui.
Hello.
So, okay, so we fixed a couple of settings in your Security Center, and you said you had another question.
Yes, the other question is, I uploaded photos from my iPhone to my computer, and then I plugged in my iPad too. So what I noticed before is that I could erase the photos, the photos, but the old photos, I could not erase them. The system didn't allow me.
Right. You can't erase photos on the iPad. Now, the new version of the operating system, you can. I think you can erase them all, though. I can't remember how fancy you can get. They used to want you to do it all through iTunes. Are you on a Mac?
No.
Windows.
I'm not. I'm on a regular. Windows.
Yeah, I think you have to. You're using iTunes, though, right?
I have it, yeah.
What is it? Now, see, on Windows, what does it use? What are you using to open your photos and sync them?
Picasa.
Picasa, okay. I think that in, I don't know where those settings live, but I think you have to change the settings on the desktop to get them off the iPad too.
That's what they had told me, you know, that you have to remove everything.
Yeah, that's terrible, isn't it?
Oh, it's so much. Can you imagine to just to do that, all of that? It's so much work. And so what I did is the other day, just a couple of days ago, by chance, I happened to remove some photos, and I thought, I'll go back to the old ones. And it let me do it. So I removed 450 photos, or at least I was clicking to remove them, and when I hit erase, it wouldn't do it.
Oh. That's a lot of work for nothing.
Yes, it absolutely led me to do all this for nothing, and I was wondering if it's maybe because it was just sort of a little mistake on the iPad, or did I do something?
Well, the sad thing is that Apple, really everything works better if you're using a Macintosh. And in particular, the Windows Phone photo sync is terrible because iTunes on Windows doesn't do photos. It does on the Mac. And you would do all this within iTunes, but the way you have to do it on Windows, you have to use a third another application. Picasa is a very good choice to do this. And I'm afraid I don't know exactly how to do it in Windows. Maybe somebody in the chat room does. I'm not sure exactly how to do this. So let me just make sure I understand the issue. You want to keep some of the photos on your iPad too. You just want to delete some of them.
Right, and some of those that are the old ones, because the new ones, it does allow you, as you said, the new program, I think, it allows you to remove the new photo that you input, but the old photos, you just could not do it. And it almost let me do it, but it...
Yeah, it thought it was doing it, but then when you tried to press erase, it said no.
Exactly.
You can't do that.
Right.
Judge in the chat room says you can't do it. That can't be right. There's got to be a way. Somebody in the chat room said, try opening iTunes and see if you have photo sync settings in iTunes. You might.
Okay.
Wait a minute now. And then Raymond, who's always been very helpful in the chat room, is giving me a link. No, that's not it. I'm not sure. This is a puzzle, man. I'd have to sit down with Windows and try it myself. Here's a discussion thread.
Right.
That says, the discussion thread, how do I delete photos in my iPad 2 that were transferred? Oh, this looks like exactly the issue. Using iTunes Sync on my Windows PC. In other words, those photos are somehow different than the ones you used Picasa for. So I'll tell you what. This is what I'm going to do, Micheline. I'll put a link to this thread because it's a long discussion. With various solutions. There's a photo cache on your computer called iPod Photo Cache. It will be a file in the directory the photos are in.
Uh-huh.
If you delete that, apparently that helps. That's the problem, is that thing is kind of sticky. You should read this, though. This is kind of complicated. I'll put this in our website at techguylabs.com, okay?
All right. Wonderful.
Micheline, it's a real pleasure to talk to you. Call anytime.
You're so wonderful. Thank you so much. Léo Laporte, vous êtes merveilleux.
Oh, merci bien. Au revoir. À bientôt. À tout à l'heure, ma chérie. Oh, my goodness. I'm turning bright red like Pepe Le Pew. Oh, I guess he's black and white, isn't he? He's a skunk. Joan in Garden Grove, Léo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Joan.
Hi, how are you doing, Leo?
I'm very well. How are you?
Oh, good, thanks. Well, my situation is I have a new computer, and it has Windows 8.1.
Oh, that's a problem. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead. No. No, it's okay.
Actually, I like it. It's really fun.
Oh, good.
But my situation is the sound works fine on videos, everywhere, except when I go into like a webcast and I'm trying to listen to the moderator, I cannot hear their voice.
Do you hear anything else on the webcast, or is it just the moderator's voice that goes away?
The That's the only thing I don't hear. I hear if there's a video in there, I can hear that.
What?
And
okay.
I'm really stumped. I've called the webcast company and all that. No one can seem to figure it out.
All right. So I'm sure they told you, okay, check your volume controls in the window where the webcast is. Because sometimes, you know, I do this sometimes. I'll turn off the sound on a YouTube video. And then I go back to YouTube and it's silent. And I go, what did I do? What did I do? But you've checked that, I'm sure. The volume's up on the webcast.
Right. Yeah, it's up.
So it sounds like what you've got is a situation where you're getting, this sounds weird, but I think it's what's going on, 5.1 surround sound from that webcast. And your settings in the sound mixer are dropping out the center channel. You know, when you have a surround sound in a home theater, the voice of the speaker comes through one speaker only, that center speaker, not the left and right speakers. So that's exactly what you would get. You'd hear everything else but the person speaking.
Okay.
So the way I would go, I would address this is I'd go into your sound control panel. And you may have settings for 5.1 surround sound turned on. I would turn that off and go start with mono sound and then maybe left, right, stereo. Or look in the volume mixer, see what you're seeing there. Do you hear anything else on the webcast?
Well, not the only thing I don't hear is people, is their voice talking.
But that's the whole webcast, right? Or do you hear like background noise on the webcast?
No, I don't hear.
You don't hear anything.
I hear the video they might be showing.
Oh, that's so weird. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking to Joan in Garden Grove, California. Could you hear me in the break, Joan? I was talking at you. Maybe not. The communal chat room came up with a solution that in all likelihood what was going on was that the center channel mix was getting mixed out. You go to the sound control panel, reset all volume controls. That might work. And it might also work to set it to a 2.1 mix down. Depends on your sound card on that one. George in Houston, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, George.
Yes, hi. I have two things I want to ask, really. I'm just not getting caught up on some of your previous shows for the last few weeks. And you talk about this malware that gets on your computer and locks everything down.
Crypto Locker, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. The thing is, does it lock down everything or just certain types of files?
No, it basically just does document files.
Okay, that's what I wonder, how much I should back up. That's the
Back up your data. You don't have to worry about the rest of it.
Wow, okay. And one thing you said a few weeks ago, I'm curious now, are you caught up now as to what happened to Casey Kasem?
No, what happened to Casey Kasem?
Oh, because you asked, is he still doing American Top 40? He hasn't done that in years, but...
No, I think that's, what's his name, Ryan Gosling? No.
Yeah,
I can...
Latest...
Go ahead.
No, the latest thing, he's on his deathbed now.
I'm so sorry. He's 81 years old. I know he's...
He has Alzheimer's and everything else. The big thing with that is his wife won't let his own children see him. And they don't even talk to his doctor. His mean wife won't leave him. So it's all over the internet. You would look it up to verify.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. He is a radio legend, and I'm very sad to hear that. Wasn't his daughter? His daughter was a DJ or something. She got into radio too. I seem to remember.
Yeah, I think one of his sons tried it, but you know, they have their own lives. But his wife won't let him see him on his own deathbed.
Oh, I'm sad. That's terrible. Well, I thank you for the update, George. I appreciate it, and our best wishes go out to Casey and his family. That's a shame. Bill in Yucaipa, California. Hi, Bill. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Well, Leo, I've been watching and listening to you for a long time there since the Tech TV days.
Oh, my. Thank you.
And anyway, my problem here started just about an hour and a half ago. I got a Dell computer that came with Windows 8, and I upgraded to 8.1, which is fine. I like that a little bit better.
Yeah, I think it's an improvement. I do. Yeah.
And the... Internet Explorer 11, and things are going along fine until I was on a newspaper website checking something, and I'm just going to say something burped. The transaction didn't go smoothly. Now with Windows 11, I cannot get anything on the Internet.
Oh, no.
On Firefox,
I shouldn't laugh. That's terrible. So IE 11 is not working.
IE 11 is not working.
And you have Firefox, and does that work?
Oh, that works. So I think there was some setting on Internet Explorer that got changed when whatever happened.
All you did was you upgraded to 11.
Oh, yeah, and that was a couple of weeks ago.
When you got 8.1. Did it break immediately?
Oh, it just did it today.
Oh, it's just happened. That's right. You said it happened 90 minutes ago.
Yeah.
and to go
over to the toolbar, or not the toolbar, but to go into the tool setting, the only options that I get is file, safety, and compatibility views. There's no such a thing as trying, you know, the internet options isn't highlighted. There's nothing there.
There is an unusual way to reset Internet Explorer, and I think it still works in IE 11. You kind of run it by hand. You can't run it well enough to go to Internet Options, or no?
No, it won't. It won't allow anything for Internet Options.
It crashes immediately before you get to that point.
No, it doesn't crash. It just doesn't do anything. I mean, when I've got the screen up now and brought it up, and I get is just a tab and nothing.
There's no menus.
No, that was the only thing. The only thing I had for menus was file safety and compatibility views. And that's everything off of settings.
Huh.
So there's just something kind of strange in there.
So apparently, according to a boy in our chat room, this is a known bug in Internet Explorer 11. Thank you, Microsoft. Here is what you need to do. You need to reset the IE settings, and we're going to give you the manual way of doing it. I was going to have you go to the Tools menu. There's Internet Options. You can click Advanced and Reset. But there is a manual way of doing that. And I think, and I'm trying to remember the exact command. What chat room, you know it. Is it I-E-C-T-R-L? There's some strange, let me see here if I can find it. Yeah, so here you go.
Okay.
Get ready. This is crazy talk. Crazy talk. You're going to open the Internet Control Panel directly by hand. So you want to do Windows key R. That'll create a little run window, and you're going to type inet, I-N-E-T, C-P-L, .C-P-L. In other words, we're going to get to this control panel by hand, since we can't do it through Internet Explorer.
Okay.
Inet, C-P-L, .C-P-L. It's opening the Internet Options control panel.
Okay.
And then once you've got that open, now you can go to the Advanced tab and either type or click Reset. And that'll reset everything. And I think you probably want to delete the personal settings and start from scratch. That'll get rid of all your history and everything. But I think that's probably going to fix it.
Okay, I'll give it a try. And that was Windows key. And what was the
Windows key R? That's the run box.
Okay.
It's a nice thing to know in Windows 8. You know, there's Windows keys for everything in Windows 8.
Sure.
Windows key R, and then you're going to open the Internet Options control panel by hand by typing INETCPL dot CPL.
Okay, I got it there. I'll give it a try.
Thank you, Microsoft. Jiminy. That's apparently a known bug. I didn't know that. You're not the first person who's had this problem. We did get, I think, a caller with this problem previously. Brand new version and everything. Scott, Palm Springs, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Scott.
Oh, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I was good, thank you. I was actually calling, commenting on the one caller that had a problem with their Samsung S3 power cycling.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had the same problem with my phone too.
Wait, did you have a fix for it?
Oh, actually, I did. Actually, luckily, my buddy has the same phone, and this happened to my previous phone too. And it actually ended up being the battery had an issue with it. What I was doing it was my phone's rooted, so I do the hotspot on it. So mm-hmm. It gets pretty hot, and apparently it must have killed one of the cells in the battery. And what it was doing is just not getting enough voltage to it, and it would power cycling. So when I was at work, I swapped out batteries with my friend. And stopped doing it.
He had a working battery. So maybe you shorted something or something weird happened with the battery. So basically replacing the battery fixed this for you.
Yeah, and then I bought a aftermarket battery on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that was no bueno. It's just,
yeah. Don't go to eBay to get batteries. There's lots of risk. You know, a badly designed battery can actually explode on you. A lithium ion is a fairly dangerous battery technology. All of them have circuitry to prevent overcharging. Overcharging could cause it to burst into flame and even explode. But a cheap battery may not have that safety circuitry, and that's really dangerous.
And you're right. It doesn't stop it if the voltage gets too low.
Yeah.
Apparently, and it actually said OEM, too, so when I bought it. So I just went to the store, I bought an original battery from the store. And, you know, but that actually fixed it. The battery shows it was charged, fully charged, and it just ended up being the battery. So,
hey, thank you for the tip. Appreciate it, Scott.
All right, take care.
Take care.
Bye.
Yeah, I use Anker, a third party that's good, A-N-K-E-R, but be careful. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Last segment of the Tech Guy Show, wrapping it up for the weekend. 88 Tech Guy, write that down. Actually, what you should really write down for future reference is the website. It's got everything, including the phone number, answers to every question, all the links I mentioned, links to our chat room, techguylabs.com. That's what you need to remember, techguylabs.com. Oh, there's a space there, too. You know, we divide the website into question and answer pairs, so you can find the question from a particular show, see the question, see my answer. Audio, video, text, but also you can comment, and that's a great place for you to, and I very much appreciate it if you do this. Add your thoughts. Leo's full of it. There's a much better way, whatever it is, because the more people that do that and vote on the comments, you see, if you see somebody that's got a wrong answer, vote it down. If you've got a right answer, vote it up, because that way I think over time this will become more and more useful, and of course we never charge or limit access in any way. Always freely available, thanks to our fine sponsors who pay for everything. Dan in Chicago, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
Thank you. I've been trying to get through for a long time. You know, you're a tough guy to get a hold of.
You know, it's just that radio audience. They just call and they call and they call. We're almost 200 stations now on the network. And 200 stations, you know, I figure there's probably 500,000 to 1 million people trying to call all at once. Pretty hard to get through.
So today's my lucky day. Thank you for giving me a minute.
My pleasure.
So I have about 3 or 4 years worth of laptop hard drives that I've been purchased and just they've been, you know, left over from laptops, and I take them apart and they break for one reason or another.
Me too. I was just going, because I moved, I was just going through all my old drives. I got tons of them.
Exactly. So I got a couple of them, and I'm thinking I can fit them into like a Drobo box, but I guess I don't know exactly how it works. And with the
not a Drobo. Drobos need full size drives.
Full size drives. Yeah. Okay. And I guess I wasn't sure. So I do have a couple of just enclosures laying around that I've put them, you know, USB enclosures, and I've hooked them up, and I have cords draped everywhere with 3 or 4 of them. But is there a better solution for laptop size? You know, the 2.5-inch hard drives? Or?
Yeah, I mean there are. There are companies that make enclosures designed for the smaller 2.5-inch drives. That's a great idea, actually.
So it's like a Drobo, but it would be usable with a smaller format.
Yeah, let me look here what Newegg's got in terms of what you want is an enclosure. And, you know, there's tons of them. What they are is they're boxes that allow you to put multiple drives in. What you want is one that has something like RAID 5 software.
Yep,
on it, exactly. So you can turn it into a, what looks like a single redundant drive.
Right.
Let me just see here if they have any for left. Somebody's got. Yeah, here's one from Rosewill. It's an 8-bay. It holds 2.5 and 3.5-inch drives. Hot swappable RAID level 0, 1, 5, 10, 5 plus spare spanning and JBOD. I mean, this is exactly the kind of thing
I would
you want.
Do exactly what I need.
Yeah,
sure.
That's $259 on Newegg. If you had 8 drives, you put them all in there. That's gonna be nice.
A long time.
Yeah,
excellent.
My favorite NAS company, apparently Synology, according to David Bix in our chat room, also does one. So that's got the greatest software. You'll pay a little bit more for it, but they have really nice network attached storage software.
One of the drives gave me an error message before I took it apart with something to do with the system allocation table. Which to me says software. Is that something?
You could reformat it, or if you've got SpinRite, run SpinRite on it.
Okay, SpinRite was the other thing I was thinking of too. Excellent.
Drobo, apparently, I didn't know this. This is a newer product. They make something called the Drobo Mini, which will do the same thing. They they take smaller drives or SSD drives, apparently.
Excellent. So
that's kind of cool.
Before you let me go, and I know you're quick, but I have, my wife will kill me if I don't tell you that one of the reasons we started hanging out and got together and been married for 12 years now is because we were watching Screensavers and Call for Help, man. Oh, yeah, and every day, at least once a week, you come up in conversation about what would Leo do.
No.
I have a question to ask him. She's listening from home right now.
What's her name?
Her name is Alicia.
Alicia, you married a geek, and apparently you're a geek yourself, so that's good.
I do a lot of the hardware stuff, and then she puts her fingers to it and makes it work with all
perfect.
The software. So.
What a match made in heaven. That's awesome.
It works. Absolutely. She's awesome. So thank you for your time, Leo.
Thank you, both of you. My pleasure.
And
take
care. Have a good one.
Yeah. I'll have to get one of these Drobo Minis. This is something new. It's basically a Drobo 5D in a small little box. It takes 2.5-inch drives.
I would love to hear how it works.
I'll get one, and we'll do a review for you. That's an intriguing little device. Since a lot of us have these leftover laptop drives just lying around, it does Thunderbolt and USB 3. Wow, this would be a good choice. So if you got one of those new Macs that has a Thunderbolt, that would be the best way to connect it. I'm ordering it right now. Dan, you've done me a favor. Sandra Bellflower, California, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Sandra.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
Oh, very good. I've heard you a few times recommend the Workforce Pro.
Yes.
The Epson Workforce Pro.
Love those. I have one at home and one at work.
And I need to get one for home. And I was just kind of wondering if you had a specific model that you use. I remember hearing about the Epson Artisan, the 837.
You know, the Artisan is a kind of lower end, and I love the Artisan, too. The Workforce is more of a business device. It has big paper tray, so you can put a couple of reams of paper in. It has big cartridges, so they hold a lot of ink. The Artisan, I love the Artisan too. I don't know if they still make it. They think they have a Perfection instead or something like it. The Workforce that I have is, I want to say, $49.50 or maybe $35.40. So the idea of these, they're all-in-one printers, right? So the idea is it's a fax, it's a color copy or a color printer, it's inkjet. But it's fairly affordable in terms of the what we call consumables, the ink itself. I think they're very, very good. Let me see what they've for some reason I think they've replaced the Artisan. Yeah, they call them Expression.
Oh, Expression.
But it's the same idea. It's a Wi-Fi printer. They're all pretty much the same. I think they do a great job. If you want to print photos, get an Artisan.
Get an Artisan.
Well, Expression. Yeah, get the
Okay, and for the Workforce Pro, you said it was $84.40?
$35.40, I think.
For the Workforce.
Yeah. But you can look through the models and see which one fits your needs. But I think that's the one I have. So it doesn't do photos as well. It's really more for, you know, plain paper copying and printing.
Perfect.
And
the
Expression is really more for photo printing.
So this is for photo. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds great. Okay. I've been listening to you for quite some time now.
Well, will you call me and tell me how you like it?
I will definitely call you and tell you how I like it. The Workforce Pro is on its way here.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for calling. It's amazing. Amazon, by tomorrow, you'll have it already. I don't think they've figured out how to send it same day yet, but that's just a matter of time. Yeah, I think they replaced the Artisan name, but I'm looking at the Expressions and the Stylus photo printers, and they look very similar. I like the Artisan because it was one of Epson's first Wi-Fi-enabled printers, so you could just plug it into the wall and use it anywhere in the house. And I've been very happy with Epson. I know there are other good printers, but I'm very happy with Epson. James Richmond, Leo Laporte. Is it Richmond, California or Virginia?
Virginia.
All right. Welcome.
Leo, in 30 years of computing, I've been one of the lucky fools who's never had a hard drive fail.
Wow!
8 years ago, I bought a Dell, got RAID 0, 250-gigabyte drives. I had two of them, and it saw them as one 500-gigabyte drives. Well, I had one fail.
Yeah, RAID 0 is what we call scary RAID.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that then, and I know it now, and I'll never do it again.
Because if any one of the two drives fails, everything's gone.
Right, including my protected Windows partition.
Absolutely,
I forgot to make my XP rescue disk. So I got a new 250-gigabyte drive I'm now running with no RAID, and I just have two 250-gigabyte drives, and I reinstall Windows 8, and now won't let me activate it because it says I installed from a clean copy. So I thought, okay, I'll
there is a way to do this. It's a there's a tricky way to do this, and I don't know the details, or I don't remember them exactly, but you know who knows them is Paul Thurrott, our Windows Weekly host, and he's written about it on his website, which is the super site for Windows. So go to winsupersite.com, winsupersite.com, and he will tell you how to upgrade without actually installing on top of an existing copy of Windows.
And I listen to that show all the time, and I forgot that site. And I'm playing with Ubuntu thinking, well, maybe I need to go free.
No.
But if I can do what he says, that would be all the better.
As I remember, you install it, and then you don't activate. It's complicated. You install it, but you don't activate it, and then you do. So it's a couple of different steps. But it's totally doable. He's done it many times. And it's what you want, frankly. You prefer a clean install. You don't want to install an operating system on top of an existing operating system. That's asking for trouble. So there is a way to do it. And Microsoft even knows about this, and they never close the door on it. Hey, I'm out of time. Thank you for being here. Come back next weekend. Thank you, Heather Hammond, Nathan Staten, our musical director. Thank you for being here. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.